Welcome to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis, your host and the founder of Woman of Wisdom Foundation, which we have been around for 30 years. 1993 was our very first conference, and we are heading into our celebrating our 30th year. The conference is March 24th through the 27th, and our theme is celebrating our sacred pearls, nourishing the waters of the feminine. It's a very experiential conference, and you'll meet lots of people in small intimate groups and breakout rooms. We've got panel discussions on interesting topics for women, racial equity, spiritual activism, and the feminine perspective from diverse religions. Our special guests this year are Rianne Eisler and Cynthia James. You can read about it on our website, womanofwisdom.org. So today my guest is Dr. Jerry of La Rosa Tunnel. So Dr. Jerry is the principal consultant and CEO of CO3 Consulting, co-creating cohesive communities and the Mixed Plate and Plow Line podcast host. She was born and raised in Honolulu, Hawaii, and she understands the power of an Indigenous leader living in a westernized world. As a cultural practitioner, she continues to learn how to walk in both worlds with grace and aloha. Her cultural reference to the sacred energy that binds all things together through love, compassion, and empathy. She's a certified trainer of the Institute of Heart Mouth Resilience Advantage program. She's a graduate of Antioch University's Masters of Whole Systems Design and a graduate from Washington State University. Jerry understands the importance of co-creating change through the social science of examining and constructing culture and community. So welcome, Jerry.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me. Every time someone read my bio, I'm like, oh, I'm impressed.
Well, you should be. Well, yes. Wow, it's so great. You're going to lead this panel on racial equity, which we did one last year, and it was fantastic. And one of the things is it's similar in the topic title, but you had changed the title from heart-centered activism, and you changed it to heart-centered advocacy. Tell us a little bit about that shift.
Well, thanks for asking that. You know, it's like when I look at the words of activism and advocacy, for activism, that can have sometimes, and this is just my personal opinion, is that activism is sometimes can have a negative connotation to that, only because with activism, is it something that we do all the time? And are we actually working towards change, or what is it that we're doing when it comes to, you know, activism? With advocacy, we are advocates for change. We take responsibility and accountability to what we're putting out into the ether, right? And so it's like, that's why I changed it from activism to advocacy. I just feel everyone should be an advocate for change.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we all have different ideas of what activism is.
Exactly.
And
yes.
And it's a matter of choice too. But there can be a backlash about it, or a negative connotation. So that's good. Okay, well, because you come from the Hawaiian Islands, and let's talk about, because for you, aloha is an important word. And tell us about what that really means. You know, and I think I read a paper you wrote, and you talk about, you know things get commercialized, or yes, you know, people start using it to, oh, hello, hello, greeting people, and don't understand there's something really deeper here.
Yeah. So the word itself, right, and you can find it in the Hawaiian dictionary, is everyone knows aloha as a greeting. Hello, goodbye. It also means love and grace and empathy and compassion. And that's what aloha means. And that's how I actually lead the work of equity, is with that compassion and grace and empathy. Through my research, what I did though, is I broke the word down because I felt like there was something deeper that I needed to figure out. And, you know, it's like in the Hawaiian language, with many Indigenous languages, nothing was written down, right? The stories and the words lived within the individual. And I wanted to see exactly what is it that my ancestors meant by the word aloha. So I took the word alo, which means forward facing and front, and ha, which means the breath of life or the spirit of the mouth, is what ha means. So, you know, compounding and bringing those words together, I was like thinking, wow, it's the way we engage in dialogue. And if we engage in dialogue, we're sharing the breath of life with each other. And life is sacred. Our words should be sacred as well, too. So when we are engaging in conversations about things can be so triggering, like race, I felt like there was a different way that we could engage in this conversation, not dismiss the impact of what race and racism has done in our country, but to be able to have a conversation about race in a way where it's going to elicit healing and not more of a divide. And that's the evolution of aloha that I speak about in my research.
Yes, that's great to know. Very important to know. But then you also broke down the letters of aloha. I'd love for you to share what, you know, A-H-O-A-L-O-H-A stands for you.
So it's like, so it's a theoretical framework that I felt like this is a great way for us to engage in conversations. As I was going through all of my studies and, you know, it's like I'm in this mode of research and inquiry and, you know, discovery. Within all of that, I was living life as well. And there were things that was coming up that was challenging some of my theories that I was coming up with, aloha being one of them, being able to have conversations with grace and empathy, especially during a triggering time. And I was like, can I really do this? Because I would be having conversations with individuals, for example, my father-in-law, who is a white male. And, you know, it's like he doesn't really understand anything. He feels that there is only one race, the human race, completely dismissing me as a woman of color. And I am, and also the nuances that I have to navigate in this world. But we got into an argument and I was like, oh my gosh, how do I live aloha when this man who I'm supposed, that I love, who is the father of my husband, how am I supposed to engage in these conversations when I can't even live aloha? The aloha that I'm speaking about, I can't do it right now. So it's like, in fact, it's going to sound a little crazy, but the acronym of aloha came to me in a dream. And I was like, oh, I'm going to utilize this as a theoretical framework to engage in triggering conversations. So the A is to ask and inquire. And when we ask questions and when we inquire, what happens in that point is that sometimes we are not able to hear what the response is based off of the question that we asked. So we've got to be able to listen, right? So listen, the L is to listen with the intention to understand and not judge what is happening in the moment. Because what happens is that when we start listening to something and we don't like what we're hearing, the cognitive dissonance sets in and all we want to do is reply. So the O came in where it's like, observe what's happening in your body, the somatic responses that is happening in your body. If you're going to ask, then you better be able to listen and also check yourself in that moment as well, too. How are you engaging in these conversations, right? Are you shutting down? Are you coming to the place of judgment? What is it that you're doing? Where's your body at? Where's your head at? And then the H is a heart. Is that if we center our conversations around the heart, where I believe that is the place where the love and the empathy and the compassion resides, then we can get to the final A, which is the acknowledgement and the acceptance of differences. And we may not be able to accept other people the way that they are, but we should be able to adapt. It's actually acknowledge and adapt. to adapt to the differences, adapt to how we engage with individuals who may have differing points of views. And so it's like the whole entire thing is just encompassed around the idea of being able to have this fierce kind of love. And that's not easy to do in a world where we're dealing with a lot of social injustices. But if we have the tendency to look towards healing and being, you know, wanting to heal the communities that we are in, it's not just the BIPOC, the Black Indigenous people of color that need healing, but also the people of European descent. We've all been harmed by this racial tragedy, this, you know, this construct of race. We've all been harmed by it. We need to acknowledge the history of it and be able to shift the narrative. And so it takes a lot of courageous conversations, you know, just to utilize Glenn Singleton's words, but, you know, in order to get past what we're dealing with right now. And so that's the Aloha and the evolution of Aloha and the acronym of Aloha. Everything's Aloha.
No, but it's great. I mean, it's, and the thing of asking is like, you know, sounds like an external thing to do because you're voicing something, but it really comes from a place of curiosity, you know, asking out of curiosity. So this is internal work, listening and observing and coming from the heart before you even, and acknowledging inside yourself, but acknowledging the other person.
Yes.
So, exactly. And I'm sure challenges to do this in the triggering moments.
Yep. And that's where the importance of returning back to ha, right? Returning back to breath. And so, you know, being a certified trainer in the concepts and philosophies of the Institute of Heart Math, it's coming back to your body. It's paying attention to what is happening, that somatic response. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like when we pause in that moment of discourse to just take a breath, then we can possibly, you know, stop those places where we will have to apologize and hurt and harm individuals, you know, harm each other. And so it's like, it's always coming back to your breath, which a lot of times people don't realize the importance, unless you're in yoga or, you know, you're doing breath work, you don't understand the importance of coming back to your body and just pausing for that moment, just, you know, kind of like stopping all of those somatic responses and all of those, you know, cognitive things that's happening in your brain. So that way you can respond in a way where it's like more healing than detrimental.
Yes. Now there's something you said I wanted to ask about, apologizing. Are apologies received when it comes to racial, when someone maybe accuses you of that was a racist comment, and then, or I apologize if that was racist, or, you know, is it, how do we apologize that it, and maybe it's using the Aloha idea, how do we apologize that it's, that knowing it'll be received on the other end, that...
I guess it's, I totally understand what you're saying. And I guess it really depends on the relationship that was built in the first place, right? And then also the actions that follow that apology as well too. And so it's like, we can say, I apologize for being racist, or if you think that was racist or whatever it is, and then walk away and not have to deal with it ever again, and then continue to do it and just have all of these apologies all over the place with that turns out to be empty because there is no action behind of that. And I think that's the other thing, right? It's like, you know, if you want to be an advocate of change, then your apologies is going to be followed by actions. So...
Yeah, and we learn from mistakes. So, yeah. You know, it's like maybe sometimes it takes a few times, but we do learn by,
yes,
you know, and we can feel it. Like sometimes, you know, you might be in a discussion with somebody and you get the look or the eyes or something. Yes. Kind of go, oops, I did something. And oftentimes we just sort of go in shame and we don't ask them, did I just say something that offended you? We just kind of go in our shell and go, oops, I did it again.
Right.
And next time, right, I'll be more careful, or I have to figure out how can I say that would be received correctly, or I feel hurt, whatever, you know, but.
Yep. In Hawaii, we have a word that is, it's pono, P-O-N-O, and that means right. And it's like, when you do something that could have been harmful for another individual, then you work towards making things pono immediately. Because if you let it sit, then it festers. And in that moment of festering, there's stories that is added to that, right? It's like, you know, if you said something racist to me and there wasn't an apology, then I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to talk to someone else. And I'm going to be like, oh my gosh, Chris said this, and this is what it is. That person's going to add to what my story is and then go to someone else. And then before it comes back to you, you're like, well, I didn't, what's going on, right? What's going on? The relationship has already severed because the story has been continuing going on, putting all of this energy. So at any moment, and I've done it myself as well too, where I said something where I kind of like got, you know, I put my foot in my mouth, and the reaction that I received from the other individual, I knew that I said something that was triggering in that moment. And I would be like, oh shoot, girl, I am so sorry that I said that. I apologize. I just stuck my foot in my mouth, right? I mean, it's like, it's a good time to make things right in that moment. And, you know, I mean, and it's like, if there's conversations that need to be had where it's going to be a little bit uncomfortable, then that's where the grace comes in, I believe. You know, it's like you be able to meet each other where you're at and, you know, talk about whatever triggering moment that just happened between those individuals. There's so much that can be done in just that split moment.
Yeah. So I think maybe some hesitancy is to, what if our apology won't be received? What if, you know,
then that's on you, right? That's on the individual. It's like, if my apology is not received, then that's on me. That's not on the other person, because I'm putting the stories behind of that. I'm thinking like it's not going to be received. And if it's not received, then I have to ask myself, what kind of relationship did I really have? Was it a relationship that is, you know, that we based our foundation on, right? It's like, was it, you know, was it friendship? Was it something that was just fleeting? What was it? If I could say something to an individual where I feel like my apology is not going to be received, then I would have to question myself that maybe that relationship wasn't as close as I thought. I mean, I said some things to a really close friend of mine, and she didn't say anything in the beginning. But then a couple days passed and I started to reflect on that, you know, on what I said. And I had to call her and I was like, you know what? This has been on my heart for a couple of days, and I'm sorry that I didn't reach out to you sooner. But I said something that I felt like maybe could have put you in a very compromising position, especially with who was, you know, around us. And I'm so sorry. And we were able to have that conversation because our relationship was strong. Mm-hmm. But if someone said something to me that I felt like, this is it, I don't really care for this person or whatever it is, I'm not that close. They said something to me, that's fine. And I would walk away. And if they said, I'm sorry, I wouldn't, you know, it's like, it's not really that close of a relationship. So it's like, I think it's more about, you know, what kind of sacredness have you created? Is this a very sacred relationship, or is this a relationship that can just, people come in and out of our lives every single day. Some of them are meant to stay here for a while. Some of them are just here for a minute. And so I think it really depends, but I don't think you should ever shy away from an apology. And if it is not received on the other side, then you've got to be okay with, okay, well, I'll just let that one go.
Yeah, you have to let it go.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, yeah, there's so much interpersonal dynamics in this. And it's really about trusting yourself, to know that you can give an apology.
Yep.
You know, that, and you're coming from the heart. And so, yeah, it's, there's so much in, so much of it.
There's a, right. I mean, we could go really deep. We could go really deep into just the idea of what does an apology mean. Yes.
Well, let's get back to our topic. The second year, and it was very powerful last year, having the racial equity panel, and we have women from different ethnic backgrounds are on the panel, so they all come from different perspectives. So why do you find this important to explore at a conference such as Women of Wisdom?
Well, I think what's important, you know, in regards to racial equity. So I'm in education right now, right? And when I think about this question on why is it important in this conference, the first thing that comes to mind is that our educational system did not prepare us to be race literate. And then as a result, people don't know what they don't know. And so this in this place is where I feel that grace and humility is essential to our collective transformation. And, you know, racism is not the fault of anyone that is living today. Those of us alive today are simply repeating the unconscious patterns of hundreds of years of racial conditioning. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but race is not real. There's no genetic markers differentiating one human group from another human group. But the condition derived from hundreds of years of racial conditioning, which we know today as racism, and that is real. And so this condition affects all aspects of our lives, including our work environment, our communities, right? People that our families, right? It's kind of like tentacles, just kind of like falling everywhere into our lives. So I feel that the important thing about, talking about this at this conference is I also believe that it's going to be the women that's going to be bringing the healing that is needed for this world. That's what I really believe. And so educating ourselves, educating individuals at this conference about race can go a really long way in creating a culture where we can all thrive. And so that's why I believe that it's important to talk about racial equity at this conference. I hope I answered your question.
Yes, great. There's another, the intersectionality, and I don't know if this pertains, but we're having people that come from different races. So we have on the panel, you know, you representing Hawaiian, we have Black, we have, I plan to have an Indigenous person, and Native American, we haven't, she'll come on board, we'll have somebody, and Asian, and Muslim. And so there's such diversity. And you know, I'm just wondering, you know, for yourself, there's been so much focus on Black Lives Matter. Is there how you feel fit in with that, the whole concept of racism? Is there a separation because there's so much focus on Black Lives Matter that there's issues with people of other color that are impacted by that? You know what I mean? It, I mean, this is a hard question.
Yes.
Like you,
yes,
we should jointly, everybody all together, work on this because everybody's impacted by racism. But there's just, because of our history, there's such a huge focus. And of course, we know why, but, you know, Black Lives Matter. But what's your take on that?
I feel, you know, it's like, that's a really good question. And yes, we are all impacted by racism. And the most important thing is that we've got to look at the structures of racism, especially in our country, and what is happening right now. We cannot dismiss that there are inequities and injustices that is happening among, you know, the indigenous population and the Asian population, but we need to be able to support the fact that with Black Lives Matter, we need to, the question is, why is it that we have Black Lives Matter? What is it that is constructed in our psyche that we have to say Black Lives Matter? Is it because of the construct behind of that? Is it because the way that we look and we treat people, Black and, you know, African American people, is so unjust that when we concentrate and we ensure that Black lives really do matter, everyone else will be able to find a place where it's like, you know what? Yeah, that's when we can say all lives matter, is when we are not looking at the injustices that is happening to our Black and even brown individuals. And so, you know, it's like a lot of times people talk about, well, all lives matter. And I'm like, does it really? No, it's not going to until I know that my Black brother can walk down the street and be approached by a police officer and not have the fear in his eyes about what's going to happen next. And I've been in that space with, you know, my cousin who is Black, and the fear, and I could feel it. And I was like, holy shit, this is something that we really need to address. And we also cannot deny that, yes, there are a lot of injustices that is happening with the Native American communities, right? The desecration of their sacred lands, right? The pollution of their waters. We cannot deny that. And, you know, with our Asian American communities, and that hate on Asians is as if, you know, everything that has gone on and the over-sexualized of the women, right? It's like, we see that, we understand that. And that's why we have to be able to come together and be able to eradicate it the best way we possibly can within ourselves and with each other.
It's almost,
I get so passionate about it.
Yeah. Well, and like the whole, I mean, there always was issues and prejudice on Asian people. It was just, it was more obvious with, you know, Black people, but it's always been there. Maybe things are more subtle. But then since the COVID thing, it just, you know, it's like it's fear of strangers, fear of the unknown that brings up, mm-hmm. you know, then we just put everything on that group of people that they've caused this. And then all that hate yep. comes out, and there's no,
right.
There's nothing in there that backs up that information as truth. It's people's fears.
Yes, the fears and the biases and the socialization and the prejudice and the discrimination and the microaggression that is born out of that, mm-hmm. right? So we've got to be able to, you know, all check ourselves. And for people of European descent, the structure and the creation of race was to benefit the people of European descent, right? That's what it was designed for. It was designed for people to, you know, not that looks like me or anyone with darker melanin. It was designed for people of European descent. And then everything else just kind of like fell behind of that. And it's really sad. And when we look at the spectrum as well too of colorism, the darker you are, the further you are away from being human.
Right.
And so, right, it's like that's kind of messed up. And we still have that. And that's why Black Lives Matter, right? It's like,
Yeah, and even in the, because I've witnessed it amongst Black people, they want to be lighter. And I took a photo of someone and goes, oh, I want you to take the photo, Chris, because you make my skin look lighter with my camera. It makes her look lighter. And it's like, no, you're beautiful as you are, you know.
But you know what that is, right? That's an internalized oppression.
Right.
Right. That's the internalized oppression. And also it's like survival as well too. And so it's like, no, we've got to be able to shift the narrative. But the first thing that we have to do is we've got to dismantle whiteness. Mm-hmm. People are not white. People are people of European descent. White was given as a way to divide. So that's what we need to dismantle, is we need to be able to dismantle whiteness.
Interesting.
That's my thought.
Yeah. Well, and there is a culture. I mean, I think because, well, I'm like first generation because my father was born in Norway. We have a lot of Norwegian inheritance and culture in my family. It's a, you know, on the genetic test, I'm 97.5% Norwegian. So I can say that, but many people like my husband has come, you know, from the 1600s have come over and they've, and there's kind of a lack of culture. I remember I had a sister-in-law who was saying envious that we had a culture, then she didn't really know her background of her culture. And so some of that is lost, that European descent. What is their culture? We've lost touch with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I can just speak from an Indigenous point of view in regards to, you know, in regards to that topic, is that culture is everything of who I am, right? My culture connects me to the land. It connects me to my people. It connects me to my song. It connects me to my medicine. And when you are removed from all of that, like, you know, being born and raised in Hawaii, it's like my body needs to be home. My body needs to, my spirit needs to be on the island. I feel ill when I'm not on my island and I'm not near my people. And I have to think about, whoa, how does that feel when individuals, people of European descent, has been pulled so far away from their culture and everything that makes them who they are? They're looking for things, right? It's like, and I think that's where the appropriation of culture comes in as well, right? Too. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, a lot of people of European descent, they don't have anything, but then when they see something else and they're like, oh, that's interesting. Oh, I like how that makes me feel. They take it without knowing the impact and the sacredness that's behind of that. And then again, on the other side of things, right? It's like when I see people start talking about aloha and you know, they're like, I like the way it makes me feel. I like the way that it sounds and it means love and everything. I'm like, whew, let's have a conversation. Let's have a conversation. Yeah, you totally can, you know, say aloha. I'm not stopping you from saying that or sharing aloha. But know exactly what you're sharing. Know where it comes from and honor that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I struggle with that too. When people use other terms like ending a prayer and they go namaste or they go aho or they go all the different phrases from other cultures. And inside I always go, you know, that's not me. You know, I'll just say blessings or so be it or something that feels okay to me. And I know what they're doing in the sense of honor, you know, it means something to them, but it's I feel like it's not theirs,
right,
to say,
right?
Not to judge them, that they're coming from someplace with it, that but I guess it just triggers that whole a misappropriation can just, you know, mm-hmm. really, really trigger you. And, but I don't know. Well, we could go on and on about that. So there's one more question I want to ask. How do we build trust and have a deep and meaningful relationships with Black, Indigenous, and people of color? You know, we're predominantly white at Woman of Wisdom. We are, in fact, I'm really pleased. We have like a third of our presenters are people of color this year, because we, especially having these panels and things. But you know, our community is predominantly white. But how do we build those meaningful relationships?
Well, I think the first thing, especially when it comes to a conference like this, is to, you know, be aware of the tokenization as well too. You know, a lot of times with people of European descent, and it happens in organizations, it happens all over, where they're like, we're in relationship with people of color, we're going to go ahead and put people of color up on the stage, right? It's like, wait a minute, is there really a true relationship? So it's taking that, it's being able to, yes, definitely have space, give space for Black and, you know, for BIPOC women to be part of this conference, but to build that relationship and trust is going to be up to the individuals, you know, running the conference, and being aware of, you know, doing things pono, doing things right. Are we appropriating? Are we tokenizing? You know, it's like being able to go through that aloha, the framework of aloha, asking yourselves the questions and listening and observing, right? It's like, how are we doing this? Inviting BIPOC women to help co-create the conference as well too. Don't create a conference for us, create a conference with us.
Yeah, yeah. And we do have some people on who have joined our team. And, yeah. You know, in the past, we would have people on the committee. We'd have people on our board. We'd have people who were presenters and of people of color. And they wouldn't necessarily bring people of color to the conference. So what's, you know, it's like, were we bringing them just because we want them? If we have that in our structure, is it because we want to bring those, you know, they'll bring those people, because, you know, that.
And it's this brown person will bring five more brown person, yeah. And that five person well, will bring five more.
It doesn't work that way. And yet you want those voices. They're part of the team to create it. Yes. So, but you can't have the expectation, well, then they're going to bring those people. Right. Yeah, it's and I remember in the beginning years of when people wouldn't know me, and somebody would say, "Where are the people of color here?" And I kind of felt, well, they don't know what we've done, what we've tried. We can't pull them in, you know, and force people to come to the conference. You know, it's kind of leaves you with a dilemma.
Well, you invite and you also ensure that there's representation, like, you know, like what you're doing right now with the panel, you know, yes, invite them in to co-create and be part of it. You know, it's like maybe shift up your mission statement, or, you know, however it is, and, you know, include the different voices that represents our entire region. Right? It's like, it's being able to come together as women, to be able, and each of us, like when I come into this conference and moderating this session, I'm not just bringing myself, I am bringing all of my Indigenous self with me. Right? And then it's like, when I let other people know, where they're like, oh, she's going to do this. And other people that look like me will be like, all right, I can trust this organization because Jerry's there, mm-hmm. right? Let me check it out. And so it's like, you know, inviting and ensuring that if I'm going to invite any of my people, that they're going to be welcomed. They're mm-hmm. going to be welcomed in the space, and they're not going to be like, oh, this person said this, or there's microaggressions, people aren't aware of their biases, you know, and all of those other things. It's like, it's complex, and it's very layered, and it's going to take, you know, one step at a time. But I think you're on the right track, Chris.
I think we are. I feel a shift with having, and really it helped us, like being online versus people. It can be welcome from anywhere versus we're in the north end, predominantly white part of Seattle. People of color, are they going to be comfortable coming to our area? Probably not.
Yep.
And so I think it opens the door, and I see a shift, and more people of color, even, you know, just attending. I think it's important that they see representation. So when they see to see the whole, all the whole, there's, you know, pictures of all the presenters on our website, and just seeing, you know, the representation, you know, is important. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like doing it virtual. It's like, it's a lot easier, like you're saying, you know, to have people from all over come in. And, you know, if and when we go back live, when we're able to go be in person, then also, you know, it's like, think of the place that you're going to be holding the conference as well too, right? You could go up to Tulalip, you could go up to Swinomish, you could go up to Snoqualmie, you could go to any of the tribes, and then you work in partnership with the individuals of that tribe. Like, I'd like to hold my conference here. And, you know, it's like, have them be part of the co-creation of that, and be open and be able to listen to what is it that, you know, they're like, okay, if we're going to co-create this, these are some of the things that I have in mind, and be open to doing that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of work. Well, I have to say, I'm enjoying online, yes, less work than being in, than doing in-person events. And I bet, also, yes, we get people from around the country. So that's been the advantage.
That's good. Yeah.
From all over joining us. Has opened that door that, you know, in the past it's been the Northwest mostly. Yeah. So that's right. That's been a real plus for us. And I don't want to lose that.
Exactly. Well, that's good. That's good. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you're going to be part of the piano. I can't even talk. You're part of the panel and going to be leading it, moderating it. What last word of wisdom would you like women to know today?
To care for your spirit, to care for each other's spirit, to support each other, to love on each other. I mean, I feel that women can be pitted against women. And if you ever, ever feel that, is question it. And, you know, it's like, hopefully we can come to this place of healing for all of us collectively.
Yes, and that's what we do at Woman of Wisdom. We come together and listen to each other's stories and witness and empower everybody to be able to share their gifts, because we all have gifts. So thank you so much for being here today, Jerry. Exactly.
Absolutely. It was an honor, and I'm looking forward to seeing you soon.
Please give your website where people can find out more about you.
Yes, it's a CO3, it's CO number 3, consulting.net.
Okay, great.
It's my website. Yes.
Great. And everybody can go to womanofwisdom.org, check out the conference. All the events are there. It's a full weekend price so you can stay all weekend. And we look forward to seeing you there. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.